This is the New Talk, the Bob Davis Podcast. Back in the studio after a technical meltdown, and I've told you all about that, so I don't need to continue, but I'm happy to be back in the studio on podcast 433. This was an interesting night because this was a night in which people actually voted in various elections across the country as somewhat of a precursor to the 2016 election cycle. And that is why I'm doing this podcast late, because pundits and chatterers are going to be telling you what it means. So in this podcast, some thoughts for you to ponder if you are a political junkie about what happened on election night, November 3rd, 2015, and what it means for election night 2016. Well, I'm going to be talking about money in this podcast. I'm going to be talking about interest rates and the Fed a little bit. And so it's a great time to talk about prideofhomes.com. History demonstrates one of the paths to personal wealth is through property ownership. You've heard me say this. I think it's pretty hard to refute. Many people out there continue to rent while waiting to purchase their first home or to move up to their next home. Now, in the last 5 years or so, there's been many foreclosures and houses sitting empty for extended periods of time. And then there are houses renovated by fly-by-night house flippers. So the housing market is tricky, and you really need expertise. You need people who understand individual houses in the market to negotiate that risk. And this is where prideofhomes.com comes in. It's also true that interest rates have been near historically low levels for many years, and there's pressure to increase rates, some discussion that the Fed may increase them in December or later. So this is the time to take advantage of low interest rates if you're in the market for real estate or someone close to you is considering buying their first home. I want to introduce prideofhomes.com to listeners and subscribers to the Bob Davis Podcast. Prideofhomes.com is a husband and wife licensed real estate agent team and a real estate investor with expertise to share with you. Take a moment and reach out and talk to Eric and Aram Lucero with Luke Team Real Estate and prideofhomes.com. They're in the North and Northwest Metro, Maple Grove, Plymouth, Rogers, Dayton, Champlin, Albertville, St. Michael, Elk River, and the North Metro Corridor, where actually a lot of people are moving these days. So for real estate expertise, you want to talk to Eric and Aram Lucero with Luke Team Real Estate, which just got great grades from one of my listeners for customer service. Visit their website today at prideofhomes.com, or you can just reach out and call Eric and Aram Lucero, 763-433-9100, 763-433-9100. So let's talk about the election results for November 3rd, 2015. And this is what I know so far. So there may be additional results in the morning that I'm unaware of. So if you're listening to this on the way to work, you know, there might be some new stuff. But I don't think so, because I did this pretty late. First, in Kentucky, a Republican has won the governor's mansion. And there's been a rejection of legalization of marijuana in Ohio, which is kind of a surprise, and the rejection of gay rights legislation in Houston. Virginians also rejected a Democrat bid to get control of the Senate in the Old Dominion. And in the Twin Cities, just very quickly, it looks like a mixed bag when it comes to some of these school property tax increase referenda, with some places voting tax increases and others voting them down. So I don't know that there's any necessary profile there of a particular trend towards any one direction, conservative or so-called not conservative. So at first blush, it appears to have been a pretty conservative trend for 2015. Based on that, I might suggest that the media in general, pundits, commentators, columnists, are underestimating the intensity of feelings on the part of Republican voters, and that what we saw last night might suggest a conservative trend, which would be more than a little surprising considering what people have been writing, but a continuation of what we saw in the 2014 sweep of Congress. Now, I'm not saying that that is exactly what's going on. I'm saying you're probably going to be hearing that from different sources, seeing it on Twitter and so forth, because it's going to give some hope to Republican prospects. Now, the caveats for this, and these you're going to be hearing these too, are that these were southern states, although Kentucky has more registered Democrats. And I mean, I would just simply suggest that a Kentucky Democrat is probably a lot more conservative than a Minnesota or a Wisconsin Democrat. Virginia is, of course, a swing state these days and can really go anyway, depending on what the county by county breakdown is. And then Houston, Texas is, of course, Houston, Texas. Nothing more needs to be said about that. And we might yet see a Democrat governor of Louisiana in a runoff election November 21st. Just quickly, polls show Democrat David Vitter leading Republican John Bel Edwards, as both of them bid to replace Governor Bobby Jindal, who is a Republican. So you know, once the November 21st race is over, you might hear Democrats saying that it indicates that people are moving to the left. So it's hard to tell. Now, I've said all along, it is dangerous to watch and believe these polls, so you have to be careful with that, particularly as it pertains to David Vitter. I certainly saw plenty of stuff which suggested that the Kentucky race was going to be a lot closer than it was. And again, the proof of the pudding is in the actual election. I've often said, you know, the whole thing about political science is not polling so much, but it's actually how people vote and looking at how they vote. I prefer to wait for the actual voting results before I think I say what I think is happening, before I say what I think is happening or what might happen in 2016. And of course, we do have some results. So the question is, do these results bear any witness for what could happen in the caucus and primary states early in 2016? Let's at least talk about that. Well, maybe and maybe not. First of all, I was a little surprised at the Ohio marijuana vote. I was a little surprised at the Houston, Texas vote on LGBT gay rights thing. And I was a little surprised with the win for Bevin. I think his name is Bevins in Kentucky, particularly since he activated the evangelical Christian vote and is a Tea Party guy. So that's going to surprise a lot of people, and people are going to take real clear notice of that. But if, and if is the key here, if there is a trend of higher or high enough Republican turnout because people are frustrated and angry and just plain pissed off, then the punditry could be caught flat-footed or even shocked at the very least on February 1st, Iowa caucus night, and maybe in the first actual primary, which is in New Hampshire, and then in South Carolina's GOP primary and Nevada's Democrat caucus following quickly on February 20th. And then I'm looking at this list of caucuses, and then Nevada's GOP caucus on the 23rd, and then South Carolina's Democrat primary on 27th. Remember, these are bifurcated primaries with different dates. Super Tuesday, then, is March 1st, and then we will know what kinds of surprises are on hand for the Republicans in particular. And why do I say that? Well, the ground is beginning to change, and I'm going to talk about that shortly. I'm reading a lot of speculation these days about how this or that candidate and what they want to do and how this or that candidate will work or won't work or isn't going to be electable or whatever. And I just get the impression that people on the campaign trail and people who talk about and report on this stuff all the time are already jaded to the point where it might cloud their judgment. This is why I have refused to say I'm for this guy or that guy. I'm still not going to do it, and I'm not going to do it in 2016 either, or this guy or that guy is going to win, because you don't know at this point, and no one is going to know until people actually vote. Now, I don't think that people being angry and the reporters being jaded and not seeing the anger guarantees a Republican victory or sweep like we saw in 2014. You know, one could argue that that was historic and a one-off, but it also means that it doesn't guarantee that there will be a Democrat victory. And I think the term, pissed off is a correct term, because if people are pissed off enough to come out in large numbers to make races competitive or create an overwhelming advantage come November of next year for, first, non-establishment candidates like Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders, and second, for Republicans, then this could be a very, very interesting election cycle. Meanwhile, in the GOP, there is turmoil as the Republican National Committee is losing control of the debates and the debate process and the whole election process. And I say that because Donald Trump and Ben Carson in particular, and Ted Cruz in the secondary, and the implosion of Candidate Zero, better known as Jeb Bush, and to a lesser extent, the movement of establishment money towards Marco Rubio, who is today's flavor of the month, suggest to me that the middle sort of moderate group is losing its grip on the power. Now you have the Trump and Carson campaign negotiating with the networks to get their own rules, or they're not going to show up at the debate in Milwaukee on November 10th. The RNC is continually trying to discredit and destroy Trump or Carson, or both. They have from day one, depending on which day it is, and yet they don't go away. They keep predicting their demise, and yet neither of them go away. They just get stronger, and they've been doing the same thing with Ted Cruz, who is starting to surge a little bit as well. So, and what do they say? Well, they say, oh, they can't win a general election. And it seemed to me, and I said this before in a couple of other podcasts, that it looked to me like this was just going to be a coronation for Bush until Donald Trump got into the race and blew it wide open. And they're saying the same thing they said about the opponents to Romney. Well, they can't win a general. Ron Paul can't win a general election, for example. Listen, this is the truth. Trump can win a general election just as much as Hillary Clinton can win a general election. Trump is qualified. Rubio is qualified. Cruz is qualified. Trump in particular and Ben Carson in particular have the poll numbers to support that their candidacies so far are viable. And the RNC and the DNC do not get to decide who the guy who can win is. That is up to the primary and caucus voters. If anything, this shows the establishment politically in this country is losing its grip on power. And I mean, you could say that it's both on both sides of the political spectrum, which means chaos in the ranks for this particular election cycle, especially if there are developments in world foreign policy issues or economic issues. And then you add to that big surprises once people start voting and you have a recipe for great TV coverage of the at least the Republican National Convention in Cleveland next summer and maybe the Democratic Convention as well. So there's the usual caveats about spending and raising money and burn rates with campaigns. There is the usual discrediting of the so-called grassroots. But here's the thing, and I've certainly discredited the grassroots because people say they talk about grassroots and I call it AstroTurf because a lot of times it is AstroTurf because people don't go out and vote. But I would say this to myself. What if the grass catches fire? You know, this doesn't mean I'm endorsing any particular candidate, but it could be that people get fired up enough that they actually come out to vote in large numbers. You know, on the Democrat side of this, you have Bernie Sanders. You also have Jim Webb now making noise about running as an independent. And I think there's going to be some big surprises when people start voting, as I've said, just as I think there's going to be some big surprises when it comes to foreign policy results and the economy in the waning hours of the Obama administration. I have said and I continue to say that I have a really bad feeling that his administration is not going to end well, and I believe that that's going to change the picture for Republicans in a big way. When I get through talking about this issue with politics, I'm going to talk about the economic situation a little bit in a political way, and I'm not real optimistic about what happens through next year to the election. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but I don't think that President Obama's administration is going to end well. And the commentariat continues to write nonsense. The latest for me that has really got me worked up tonight is this tawdry explanation from CBS's Marketplace, which is one of the worst, about how the economy thudded to a 1.5% GDP growth number in the third quarter. But it's okay because people are spending their savings from gas price reductions like a tax cut, which is a shibboleth. You know, they have said that, and yet the expected, you know, surge in the economy has not materialized. You know, consumer spending is up, but we don't know why consumer spending is up. It's going to take a while to figure that out. Or all this continuing nonsense, which has really got me going tonight because I think it applies to the political picture a little bit, about how mergers and acquisitions are hurting the U.S. economy and causing wealth to pull at the top. I'm going to take this on because this one really ticked me off. And then there's misconceptions about tax cuts by Republican candidates, the economy, and our future. And I want to talk about some of these coming up here in this podcast. Now, I've been talking about the primaries and the caucuses, so Mobile Podcast Command is going to be heading to Iowa on February 1st to cover the Iowa caucuses. I think I'm going to Greene County. I have requested a rural caucus. I don't want to go to one of those caucuses in Des Moines. The way they do it is they have a Republican and a Democrat side, so I'll be going to both, and that'll be cool. And then we are headed down through the Mid-South. Some of those states in the Mid-South are going to be extremely important on Super Tuesday, and then to South Carolina, where the GOP primary is going to be held, and then to Georgia, which will be coming up shortly thereafter, and then on to Florida, because Florida is going to be a pivotal state. You have three presidential candidates on the Republican side from Florida, so the Florida primary is going to be really important. I'm going to be, I think that is, I want to say that's March 5th or something, or early March. And so I'm looking forward to heading into Florida, and I'm going to go all the way to the Keys and try to hit some events and see what is actually going on there and what's going on with those people. So I really appreciate the contributions to the Mobile Podcast Command Unit through the BobDavisPodcasts.com. You look for the picture of the Mobile Podcast Command Unit. You click on that. You can donate a dollar or as much as you want. That would be super cool. And I really, really appreciate your donations if you've made them. And I appreciate them if you're going to make them. Everything that you go that goes into that PayPal thing goes into funding the Mobile Podcast Command Unit. So it's essentially crowdfunded. So thanks for your donations. And that is what is up with the Mobile Podcast Command Unit. Well, summer is, you know, it's been warm and beautiful in the Twin Cities and in the Minnesota, southern Minnesota, the last couple of days, 70 degrees, 71 degrees. And it's easy to fall into that sense of, oh, I've got the sliding door open and I got the heat off and it's great out there. You can walk around with your shirt off if you want. But winter is definitely coming. Just like they say on the show Game of Thrones, winter is coming. And that means you need to call Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul to check your water heater, to check your heating system, to check your plumbing, to make sure everything is up and running right, because you don't want to have problems when it starts to get cold. First of all, when they come over to check your heat, ask them about Smart Tech. Smart Tech can save you a lot of money. Even if you just had it upgraded 5 or 6 years ago, there's new stuff that you're going to want to talk to them about. I tell you, it isn't cheap, but it does save you a lot of money long term. And then the water heater check is always something that you want to do, and the plumbing check. I had a situation once where I had a plumbing break in the middle of winter, and it was grim. It causes a lot of problems. Here's the number in St. Paul, 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, call 612-927-6488. Metro wide from St. Paul, that means the suburbs to north, south, east, and west. For four generations, Ryan Plumbing is all about quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, residential and business. So this is a good place to call if you have rental property plumbing problems. Ryan Plumbing and Heating on University Avenue in St. Paul, just west of the state capitol, where they've always been. Once again, the number in St. Paul, 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Metro-wide from St. Paul for over 60 years. That means they go to the suburbs, too. The trucks are all over the place. Ryan Plumbing and Heating. So let me talk first of all about this acquisition nonsense. The latest talk is concerning a study by former Obama Office of Management and Budget Director and Bilderberg Group Speaker Peter Orszag. He's the one who said that the stimulus would cause the economy to grow by leaps and bounds, which we are still waiting for. I don't know if you'll recall his Sunday morning television appearance in which he insisted that the stimulus would result in tremendous growth for the U.S. economy. And the other guy that participated in the study is Jason Furman, who is currently, oddly enough, the chairman of the President's Council of Economic Advisers. So both of these guys work for Obama. Both of them are pretty biased. Both of them are essentially Democrats. The study has suggested that mergers are causing wealth inequality. There's a lot of this lately. They pull these economists out and they present these economy studies, these economic studies, which try to discredit supply-side economics or try to discredit, quote-unquote, Republican talking points on the economy. They'll say, well, a study shows, whether it's the Economic Policy Institute or Piketty and Saez or these two guys, that this is a suggestion, and they're biased studies. They present from a particular point of view, and if you want to see a great video, there's a video, I think it's Kevin Williamson, who at the time was writing for Forbes, just took Piketty down at a debate that they had, and it's on YouTube, and if you YouTube it, you'll see it. But this new study suggests that mergers are causing wealth inequality, and I want to talk about this because I did a little research on this. First of all, a direct examination of accelerated merger activity in the United States these days suggests stock prices and company cash on hand are fueling higher merger activities, which would go to suggest that they are correct in their examinations and conclusions that the fat cat cats are getting fatter due to this inequality problem in the United States. But then you look into it and you say, well, in what sectors is this happening? It's happening in technology, which is to be expected because you have a lot of failures, you have a lot of successes that really generate high multiples, and then in energy. And the reason we're having a lot of mergers and acquisitions in energy is because of the slowdown in U.S. fracking is causing a lot of these acquisitions because companies are going out of business because they can't afford to keep up with the Saudis in terms of pumping more oil. And then alternative energy, which is subsidized through direct payments at federal and state levels. You also have a lot of companies that are going out of business. They were started to get subsidies and then they went out of business and things of that nature. And then healthcare, which is also partly due to government regulation and new ACA legislation and so forth, and increased profits by the big three or four insurance companies, which then allow them to eat up the small companies. And what they're suggesting is that they use federal antitrust laws to stop these mergers. But here's the thing, mergers are not always a sign of health in an economy. In fact, I would suggest that they're a sign of weakness in the economy because what it means is that the smaller, more competitive, the smaller companies are struggling to compete because there isn't enough business and the larger companies are using the power they have to essentially buy their competitors and padlock the doors. And then if you think about the federal and state regulations and corporate taxes as essentially fencing off competition from competitors or making it more expensive to compete for startups who don't have as deep pockets as companies that have been around for a while, then you start looking at government aid, Federal Reserve easy money, and artificially low interest rates, then you could suggest that, in fact, government intervention is just as responsible for the current M&A trend as cash on hand or economic weakness or any of the reasons that Ortzag and the current chairman of the President's Council on Economic Advisors, Jason Furman, would suggest. The other thing is capital flows are increasing to the United States, and you know why? This is really interesting. Companies are actually inverting, merging with overseas holding companies or competitors to avoid U.S. taxation. So be careful what you believe that the United States government can do about evil corporations. You know, it's very interesting to me that they would invoke the idea of antitrust legislation, which frightens companies, because it's just more government regulations, when in fact it looks to me like what's causing this sort of, it's the Gordian knot of taxation, regulation, and government intervention in industry of all kinds that is causing a lot of these problems. And what happens is companies, in order to avoid it, simply invert. And the perfect example of that is the big Democrat and Obama supporter, Warren Buffett, who inverted Budweiser by having InBev buy Budweiser, you know, so that he didn't have to pay taxes or deal with U.S. regulations. Okay, now the other thing that has got me going tonight. All the Republican presidential candidates are now pushing some kind of tax package, and that's supposed to make them look like Reagan. That is how they invoke the Reagan, the ghost of Reagan, by pushing these tax cuts, because everybody loves a tax cut, right? I feel it's time for someone to set them straight, and I'm going to do it. I'm going to set people straight on this idea that taxation or cutting taxation is a panacea for what ails us economically. First, let me say that the U.S. corporate tax rate is too high. 35% used to be competitive, but today we have one of the highest corporate tax rates in the world. It should be lowered. The other thing is corporations are vessels. They do not pay tax in the pure sense of the concept. The customers pay the tax because corporations look on taxes as an expense and pass it on to the consumer if the market will bear it. If you pay $29 for a piece of cheesecake at a downtown Minneapolis restaurant, you ought to ask yourself whether it has to do with doing away with tips and paying people the same, paying the cook and the dishwasher the same rate as the waiter, or an increase in minimum wages, even though all the waiters, you know, want to raise their fists in a socialist cheer that they're now having their paycheck increased. When the consumer goes to buy the cheesecake and it costs them more, guess what? The company is not paying for that. Now, if the market doesn't bear that increase in the price, guess what? They're going to go out of business. Second, corporations also have many legal means to avoid paying tax, including, for example, inversion, as I mentioned. So lowering the corporate tax, or literally abolishing it entirely, would lead to more companies repatriating their assets and headquartering in the United States, hiring more individuals, especially skilled individuals who do in fact make more money and actually pay taxes. Second thing is the current capital gains tax is 20%, which I think should be lowered as well if we want more investment in real estate and stocks and corporations and individual entrepreneurs entrepreneurial activity. I'm not saying 20% capital gains is too much, but if we were to get rid of it or take it to 10%, I think you would see a lot of activity economically. But I think all of this talk of a tax package, you know, lowering the tax for this bracket and increasing it for that bracket is really silly. And I'll tell you why. First of all, even sillier still is the punditry and the commentariat habit of talking about how this tax cut or that tax cut will have to be paid for, or how expensive this tax cut is versus that one. First of all, it isn't the government's money that they have to pay for because they gave you a tax cut. This is their responsibility to return the taxes to the people instead of using all of the tax money up. But what all of these candidates ought to be talking about isn't tax cut, because they love to talk, you know, tax cuts, as I said, because Reagan and Kennedy both passed historic tax cuts in their administration and the economy grew during those periods. But today's tax rates are low by comparison to the administrations of Kennedy and Reagan. Today, the top tax rate is tax racket. The top tax rate is roughly 40% for the top tier. The bottom tier pays about 10%, but gets an earned income tax credit, and the so-called middle class pays about 25%, and many of them also get earned income tax credits. In 1979, rates for all Americans, and particularly for the middle class, were much higher, like a 70% top tax rate for the highest brackets. Republicans like to talk about tax cuts, but the only place to really cut is for the rich, who don't always pay the highest bracket anyway because they can afford tax remediation and they pay at lower rates by legally reducing their income and assets. And Democrats then can use this to talk about how the Republicans just want to help the rich, and that the bottom line with Democrats is that they want to soak the rich, and they have been soaking the rich for 70 years for every social program that they want to enact, because their solution is always a government solution for, you know, and I don't think that's an unfair characterization. Most of the time, Democrats want to use tax money to pay for programs to help people who have social problems, right? Now, I'd like to suggest that the Republicans stop talking about tax cuts. First of all, it takes a big issue off the table for Democrats, and it lets them go ahead and talk about raising taxes on the rich, and there isn't any discussion of Republicans cutting taxes on the rich. Secondly, it gets to the direct reality of the situation, which is that what we need to do is cut spending. This is a week in which the Congress suspended the debt ceiling and federal spending immediately increased by $338 billion. This is the same day that it was revealed that the DOD spent $43 million building a gas station in Afghanistan, part of the $8 billion that has gone up in smoke there for quote-unquote rebuilding the country, not to mention what we've spent in Iraq. What Republicans should be talking about is slashing, not cutting, but slashing federal spending, because deep spending cuts will eventually justify tax cuts. And that means defense as well as domestic and discretionary spending. It means local spending. It means federal spending. It means state spending. And I think it means defense, as I said, as well as all this other stuff. And it means raising the retirement age. It means perhaps raising the Social Security payroll tax to get that thing squared away. And it means vouchering out Medicare and repealing the ACA. And it means ending unionization in the federal government. It means slashing federal pay, including Congress and the president and cabinet jobs, as well as benefits. And it means cutting spending through a sequester-style mandate throughout all government programs, or if you like, simply defunding the EPA and the Department of Education and the IRS and the ACA and so forth. You get the idea. We need to cut spending, and we need to cut spending drastically. And Republicans aren't talking about cutting spending. They're talking about giving you tax cuts like they're helping you out, but they're just big government conservatives unless they attack the spending issue. It isn't taxation at this point that is the problem. Certainly taxes could be lower. It is spending. And that's where the real fight is concerning government power and limiting government power at every level in our government in this country, because all of this spending is how they spy on us. This is how they run black ops that get us into trouble. This is how they keep the truth about the aliens, if you will, from us. This is how they oppress us with studies and nudge economics, which are either misdirected or nothing more than Marxism rewired. We need to cut spending. We need to cut it permanently. We need to cut corporate and capital gains taxes. We need to get the government out of our lives. And the only way to do that is to defund it. And that is true if you are Bernie Sanders. And that is true if you are, you know, Donald Trump. We need sound money also based on metals to stop the Federal Reserve from debasing our currency, which by the way, the debased currency in this country, the fact that the dollar is worth 1/250th of what it once was, is the heart of our moral problems in this country. It isn't religion. It isn't the fact that we're at each other's throats because of racial issues or anything else. It's because the money is consistently worth less year after year, at least by 1960 standards. And we need to address that. By gold standards, we are really in trouble. And it allows these non-elected bodies to go out and print money and do all sorts of things with our economy that they shouldn't get to do. Meanwhile, we're sending troops back to Iraq. We're sending troops into Syria, and the economy is growing only by 1.5% after they said it was going to boom. It isn't booming in 2015. And these guys on TV wonder why Americans are so pissed off. Like I said, get ready for a few surprises once people start voting. Thanks to the sponsors of the Bob Davis Podcast, Podcast 433, Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul. Have them come over and check your water heater. Have them come over and check your heating and your plumbing and ask them about smart tech for your heating system. They could save you a lot of money. 651-224-4771 in St. Paul. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Metro-wide from St. Paul. That means the suburbs too. Residential and business. Call Ryan Plumbing and Heating, especially for emergency service. They do a great job with that. And thanks, Greg Ryan, for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcast. Don't forget prideofhomes.com. If you're looking for a home in the northern part, the north and northwest part of the metro in Minneapolis, in St. Paul, Maple Grove, Plymouth, Rogers, Dayton, Champlin, and so forth, if you have someone that you love who is looking for their first home, a lot of people are moving up north and northwest. Visit the website today of prideofhomes.com and get details, or reach out to Eric and Aram Lucero with prideofhomes.com and Luke Team Real Estate, 763-433-9100, 763-433-9100. And thanks, guys, for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcasts. Thanks to the digital sponsor of the BobDavisPodcast.com, Alpha Systems. Hey, if you're a pilot, and I know that there are a number of pilots listening to the Bob Davis Podcast, you want to be safe on takeoffs and landings. We want you to be safe on takeoffs and landings. So I want you to think about Alpha Systems. Alpha Systems makes the revolutionary angle of attack indicator. Bottom line is Alpha Systems AOA saves lives. Click on the Alpha Systems banner for more information about Alpha's revolutionary angle of attack indicator at thebobdavispodcast.com. It's FAA approved. Get it into your avionics package today. And thanks, you guys, for sponsoring the digital side of the Bob Davis Podcasts. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast, Podcast 433 on Stitcher.com, the granddaddy of podcast distribution, iTunes, or TuneIn. And thanks for liking and sharing and favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. I'm BDavis7843. And again, thanks for your donations at thebobdavispodcast.com. Boop. Thank you.